Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the doctrine of parens patrae, the parent-child relationship, when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there is no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment to our Constitution was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. And the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. And the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. That was Justice William O. Douglas of our United States Supreme Court that made that statement. You know, our princes and our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from the political process, not from the politicians, certainly not from the lawyers or the bureaucrats. Now, old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call me at the law school, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. On the website, click on to the email, and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, I'm the bearer of bad news, bearer of bad tidings. And last time we were talking about this thing of parental control, property rights over children. Who owns your child? And the answer is the state owns your child. And I showed you that from American jurisprudence. I'm reading it right out of the Legal Encyclopedia, Volume 59. Just go to any law library. Probably, if you live in a big city, you'll have a law library in your public law public library. If you're close to any university or college, such as we are here, Missouri State University, here in Springfield, Missouri, they got some 500,000 volumes. They have a law library in the library. You can go right in there and pick up Amger, CJS, Volume 59. Just turn over here to Parent and Child. And I'm on Section 11, Rights of Respective Parents, and I'm giving you the bad news. And the last time I was on here, I said, "All right, ladies, let me tell you how it is. Hey, boys and girls, let me report to you. Here's the state of the law." Because here in America, people, parents, mothers and fathers and children, totally ignorant of the law. Hell, they don't know where social ladies' power begins and ends. They don't know where the teachers and public school power begins and ends. If they knew, they could exercise their own parental powers. And you have certain parental powers, rights, responsibilities, duties, privileges, and immunities, parents, that you can exercise if you knew what they were. You know, can you spank your child? Yes. Can you take your child out of public school? Absolutely. Will you be told by professionals that you can't do that? Certainly. Are what these professionals telling you lies? Absolutely. Do you believe the lies that these professionals tell you? Well, of course you do. That's why you've been cowed and cowered into submission. Now, you never should have allowed these fools to take control in the first place, but now that these fools have taken control, they're in the driver's seat, boys and girls, and you might as well recognize it for what it is. All right, now, can you live your life? Can you exercise your parental authorities and rights and privileges and under the law of God? Absolutely. Absolutely. You still practice that to this day. There's a couple of three little minor little thingies over here that you can't do that you used to be able to do, but by and large, you know, you can raise your children and keep them in line. Now, listen to rights of the respective parents. This is where we were in the last program when we ran out of time. By the common law, that's the law of God, the law of Moses, the common law. By the common law, parental rights, like most rights pertaining to the family, were vested in the father alone. During his life, the mother, at least under ordinary circumstances, had no parental rights recognized by law. She, the mother, was entitled, it was said, only to reverence and respect. The modern tendency, however, is toward the equalization of the rights of the father and mother. This is evidenced by the adoption of statutes in many jurisdictions making the father and mother joint guardians over their children, or expressly providing that the father and mother shall have the joint and equal right to the custody, control, and services of the child. A transfer of the parental status and rights from the father to the mother may be made by agreement, tacit or express, between them. Ah, did you catch that key phrase in that paragraph? It says, this is evidenced by the adoption of statutes in many jurisdictions making the father and mother joint guardians over their children. Joint guardians. Do you know what the legal definition of a guardian is? Well, boys and girls, let's look at this guardian word relationship, because a guardian is not a property owner. You see, under the law of Moses, you fathers and mothers were the owners of your children, and you had a property right in your child. That property right has now been taken away from you, and it's been replaced with guardianship. Okay, let's see what you got for your money. You used to own the child, and now you gave up ownership of your child. You did that when you got a birth certificate and a marriage license and entered into a three-party limited general partnership with the state. That's when it began. You didn't have to do that, but you did. And I'm not here to second-guess you. When you got a marriage license, you are presumed to have known what the legal consequences of that act was. You knew what you were doing, and you were of legal age to make that decision. So you brought in a third party into the bedroom. And under the definition of guardianship, it is a trust relationship of the most sacred character. Boys and girls, you entered into a religious enterprise with the state of California. I didn't write this. I'm just reading to you from this same book, American Jurisprudence, Guardian Ward, 39, Am Jur. 2nd. This is Volume 39, Section 1, Guardian and Ward, Definition and Nature. A guardianship is a trust relation of the most sacred character, in which one person called a guardian acts for another called the ward, whom the law regards as incapable of managing his own affairs. Now, you see, boys and girls, you gave up your position as the absolute property holder of the child and gave it up for something less than a property right. You now have a guardianship. Gee. And whatever this guardianship is, it is sacred. It's religious. Did you know that? I hear people all the time say, well, we got to have a separation of church and state. Oh, yeah? Well, the state is God. And when you enter into a contract with the state, that is religion, boys and girls. And when you obey the laws of your state, like California, New York, or Washington, you are worshiping your God, because that's what worship is. It is obeying your master. Which, by the way, is prohibited by the first commandment, which says, you shall have no other gods before me. But we humans down here, especially in the United States, decided that this God of the Bible is not the God that we want to follow. We want to follow any God but that God. And so we've come up with a plethora of gods. In this country, we have 50 of them so far at last count. No, we got 51. We've got a federal government over here and 50 state governments, and we worship those laws of those gods, those sovereigns who create our law, which, by the way, we were told by our Creator not to do, but then, what does He know about law? So we've entered into a guardianship then, and the purpose of statutes relating to guardianship is to safeguard the rights and interests of minors, that's your children, and incompetent persons, and the courts should be vigilant to see that the rights of such persons are properly protected. The court having jurisdiction of a guardianship matter is said to be the superior guardian, while the guardian himself is deemed to be an officer of the court. So here's what happens. Your little kid goes out here and breaks the law. And then the parents of the child, that's the state, sends the police out. That's the agent who arrests the child and takes him off to juvenile hall. And then he is prosecuted in juvenile court. That is, he's going to be disciplined by his parent, the superior guardian in this relationship. And what are you, mom and dad? You are guardians. And there's a superior guardian. And the court is the superior guardian. The legal effect of your guardianship, boys and girls, is that you've been reduced to the status of a babysitter over the state's child. And you can see that right here in Volume 39, Section 1, Guardian-Ward Relationship, Section 1, Definition and Nature. All right, now last page over here of guardianship. I don't want to bore you to death by reading you 23 pages. So, let me get to Section 22, the appointment of a conservator. In several states, statutes authorize a person who, although of sound mind, when he believes he's incapable of managing his own estate or of caring for his own property, he may apply for, request, or simply consent to the appointment of a conservator or a guardian of his estate or of his person or both, who, when appointed, possesses over the estate substantially the same powers and is subject in regard thereto to substantially the same duties as a guardian of an incompetent. Now, mommies and daddies, when you went down and got your marriage license, do you know what the legal meaning of that act was? Well, when you went down to the state, the sovereign power, the lawmaking power, and applied for a marriage license, you declared yourselves to be incompetent and unable to manage your family affairs. And you applied to the state for a guardian. So the state said, okay, we're going to give you these various guardians. We're going to give you social lady. She'll tell you what you need to do. We're going to give you school marm, that is school teacher. She'll tell you what to do in the way of educating your child. We're going to give you probation officer, and he'll correct and discipline. We're going to give you family court, and we're going to give you the juvenile judge. So now you see, now you got juvenile judge, probation officer, social lady, and school marm. And these people are all paid professionals. You can't get these jobs unless you've been to college and get letters after your name, which makes you a professional more knowledgeable and more capable than God Almighty Himself in regulating family and family affairs. Now, we presume, boys and girls, that when you did this, you knew what you were doing. Because, after all, the law requires you to be at least 18 years of age in order to go down and get this marriage license. You need to be 18 years of age also in order to join the Army without parental consent. Now, God says that you're not of age until you reach 21, but of course the state knows better than God, and so they have lowered the age of emancipation from 21 to 18. Just thought I'd share that with you. And then, of course, our Supreme Court just recently said, oh, this thing of killing kids is bad public policy, so we're going to change God's law, and we're going to enact our own. You know, we've been doing that for the last, 100 years or more, at least the last 100 years, fixing God's mistakes. Okay, well, now that you're in the process of fixing God's mistakes, you have to bear with and follow the instructions of social lady, school marm, probation officer, and juvenile judge. Just thought I'd share that with you. Now, here's the effect of the statutes. The modern tendency to equalize the rights of the two parents as to their children has led to the enactment in a number of jurisdictions of statutes by which the father and mother are declared to be joint guardians of their children with equal rights of custody and control. Notice the term here, equal rights. God, we love that, don't we? Equality. That's what we want. We want to be equal. I remember, I was watching TV one time, and there was this lady named Phyllis Schlafly. Phyllis Schlafly, she's a lawyer. This is back in the days before I ever opened a law book. I didn't know. I couldn't have found a law book. I wouldn't have known where to find one. And this lady was on TV. And they asked this lady, this woman, Phyllis Schlafly, and they said, now, Mrs. Schlafly, why are you opposed to equal rights for women? That's a pretty good question. Think about that, ladies. Why are you opposed to equal rights for women? See, it was called the Equal Rights Amendment back in the 70s when they were trying to pass that. Now listen to this lawyer lady. Just blew my socks right off my feet. I was sitting there watching the telly, and I was looking at the telly, and here's what Mrs. Schlafly said. She said, I don't want to give up my superior rights for mere equality. Did you get that, boys and girls? Phyllis Schlafly, lawyer. She says, I don't want to give up my superior rights. Superior rights? Superior rights? Do you mean to tell me that women have superior rights to men? I'll bet you never heard that, ladies. Now remember in the last program I said no woman on this planet, past, present, or future, has ever owned a child, owns a child, or will ever own a child on this planet. Tain't possible. Now there are some people that can own children. Men can own children. States can own children. Kings can own children. Women can't. And yet here's this woman, lawyer, Phyllis Schlafly, says, I don't want to give up my superior rights for mere equality. So evidently this lawyer lady must have known something that the rest of us didn't know. Now the interviewer, you know, some pimply-faced punk from journal school, he was kind of taken aback by her reply, so he changed the subject. He didn't know what the hell that meant. Took me quite a few years to figure out what he meant, or what she meant. Well, here's what it is, boys and girls. So you ladies out there, now sharpen your pencils on both ends, and let me tell you what your superior rights are. Superior rights. Under the law of God, from the Garden of Eden forward, you women have superior rights to men. Did you know that you ladies are superior to men? Just thought I'd share that with you. Now, God is a sexist, and you might as well get used to it. He is, without any doubt whatsoever, the world's foremost sexist. He has divided humankind into two sexes. And then he appointed to one sex certain duties, obligations, and responsibilities. And then he appointed to the other sex certain duties, obligations, and responsibilities. So don't get mad at me now, boys and girls. I'm all for equality. God, I was all for the Equal Rights Amendment. I want women to have equal rights with men. And I want women to have equal duties and responsibilities with men. I want women to be responsible for their debts. I want women to get their asses out there and go to work like all the rest of us men have to do, and to support their families with the same equal regard as men do. And I want women to be responsible for the defense of our country, and to be drafted into the army and sent into the front lines as cannon fodder, just like men. But God Almighty said, nope, I ain't allowing that. He just plain said, no, we ain't having it. In fact, our U.S. Supreme Court, you know, once in a while they make the right decision. In fact, they make the right decisions more often than not. I don't want to denigrate the Supreme Court by any stretch of the imagination. After all, the Supreme Court sits there at the express will of the Creator of the universe. I mean, those judges are sitting there with the blessing of, the express permission of. They wouldn't be there if it weren't for the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So far be it from me to point my finger at any of God's anointed and chastise them in any way whatsoever, including George Bush. And once in a while I point out that George Bush is a horse's ass, and then once in a while George Bush makes some kind of dumbass, stupid moves in opposition to and in violation of the laws of God. But, you know, I didn't put him in office. The Creator of the universe did. It says so very plainly. In fact, old Nebuchadnezzar, he was crazy for about 7 years. He came back and he says, now I know who it is that puts kings on their thrones and removes them. It's the God of Abraham that puts kings on their thrones and removes them. And Tony Blair is sitting there because God Almighty allowed him to hold that office. Not that Tony Blair obeys God and keeps his commandments or follows the Ten Commandments or the laws of God, but when it's time to remove Mr. Blair, he will have a heart attack and disappear from the world's scene swiftly and suddenly. Just thought I'd share that with you. Now, ladies, you've got your pencil sharpened on both ends. No woman on planet Earth, under the law of God, can be compelled to be responsible for her debts. Women are not responsible for their debts, boys and girls. They're not responsible in the past, aren't responsible today, and will never be responsible in the future. Women, if you're responsible for your debts, it's because you wanted to be. You volunteered. No woman can be compelled to serve in the military. Now, if you want to go serve in the military and be cannon fodder in the front lines, that's a choice that you made and you signed up. And no woman can be compelled to work to support her family. And that's the law of the United States, and in Anglo-Saxon administration, as far as I can tell, that's the law around the world. You Australians and New Zealanders and Canadians and Brits all practice that same law. We all got it from the same source. All comes from the Mosaic Code. Now, of course, we got women out there that want to be joint and equal guardians of their children. Now, the way the system was set up, God gave those children to you husbands, fathers, and gave you wives to your husbands. A wife is a chattel property of her husband. That's why it's against the law to commit adultery. Protected by two laws. Thou shalt not commit adultery, and thou shalt not steal. Property rights, boys and girls. And a woman has a property right in her husband, and that's why thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not commit adultery applies to your husbands, ladies, because that husband is a valuable property asset owned by you. And women own property under the law of Moses. Now, you women don't own property in community property states under the laws of the United States and your state. That's right, girls, ladies. You do not own property because it's community property. You want equality? Well, you got it. My God, you got it. Now live with it. You wanted equality? You got it. Now, equality isn't everything that it's cracked up to be. And Phyllis Schlafly put the nail right in the coffin when she said, "I don't want to give up my superior rights." And you women have superior rights. You're not responsible for your debts. Can't be compelled to support your husbands. And you can't be compelled to make the world safe for democracy. On the other hand, your husband has to defend you, and he has to fight to make the world safe for democracy, to protect you. He has to feed you, clothe you, and house you, and your husband is responsible for your debts, and that's why in a divorce action, your husband rushes right out and publishes in the legal notices section of your paper, "I'm no longer responsible for Agnes's debts." And that's because, well, he was responsible for your debts, Agnes, when you were married to him. And that's why that husband is such a valuable asset, because he's the guy that goes to debtor's prison when the debts ain't paid, Agnes. Not you. It's old Bill, not you. And when it's time to go to war, it's old Bill that goes to fight to make the world safe for democracy, not you, Agnes. It's your husband. He's the one that does that. So God, the world's preeminent sexist, made certain rules for women and certain rules for men. Said, "Now you men, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told, and you women, do the same. And if you do that, it'll work out better for you." And we woke up one day and said, "Oh no, this God, he can't know anything about family and family relations. I mean, my God, what could a mere creator know that we humans couldn't do better after having gone to college and gotten a degree in sociology or psychology or psychiatry or family relations, you know, or, you know, I mean, after all, when you got letters after your name, and you got to admit this, God doesn't have any letters after his name. Jesus never went to seminary. What in the hell would he know about the Bible? But your preacher, now he's been to seminary. He's got letters. He's a doctor of divinity. I mean, this guy knows something. You want to listen to your preacher? Boy, my God, whatever you do, don't listen to Jesus. Don't ever listen to God. They're not authorities." Now, as a result of that, of course, now you've got this little problem with social lady and a probation officer. And I get calls here. I don't know if it's every day, but boy, it's regular. It's every week, I'll guarantee you that. Somebody calls up over and they're complaining about probation officer, family court, probation or a juvenile judge, a social lady, a probation officer. They're just complaining, "Hey, my wife is a whore and a slut, and she's got custody of my kid, and I want to get my kid away from her." He doesn't have a clue as to how to do that. This same guy, though, he could probably tell me what Mickey Mantle's lifetime batting average was and get a clue about how to get his kid back away from a slut. Then we got medical care over here. This is another one that comes up quite often. I'm just going to look over here at Section 15. We're looking at parent-child relationship, medical care over here. I get calls once in a while, especially from people that are religious Christians, you know, and others of that stripe. They could be of some other religious ideology, but here in America, primarily Christians, they call. They say, well, we don't believe in vaccinations. Or we don't want our child's tonsils cut out and his adenoids experimented on and his appendix cut out and so on. They don't know how to stop. They don't know how to stop the medical malpractice against their children. And so let's talk about that for a little bit and let's see if there's something we can do. You got a girl, 14 years old, she gets knocked up by the neighbor boy. And the school nurse says, "Well, what you need, little girl, is an abortion." And so the little girl goes out and gets an abortion. They don't even tell mom and dad about this. That's right. The school nurse, the school authorities do not have to tell you mom and dads about your daughter getting an abortion. Now, it seems like to me that an abortion is kind of a surgical procedure, isn't it? Now, this state has the power. They can take your child away from you. And this occurs every once in a while when people will go to their local church or preacher and they'll anoint the child with oil and they'll pray over this child or whatever it is. And the parents do not want medical services for the child. And the child, the state comes in, social lady comes in, sues the parents, takes the child, puts them in the hospital, cuts their appendix out, and sends them back home. Or takes the kid and sends him to the hospital, cuts the fetus out, and sends him back home. And, you know, what the hell are you? All you are is a crummy babysitter. Always remember this, parents. All you are is a crummy babysitter. Nothing more, nothing less. However, the state does confer upon the babysitter certain privileges and franchises. And if you know how to take advantage of those privileges and franchises, you can prevent the state from taking your child and cutting out the fetus or cutting out the appendix or cutting out the tonsils. You know, it can be done. But don't give them the finger, you know, and say, well, you can't do that. Why, I'm this child's mama. Well, I'm this child's papa. No, mamas and papas, you are the child's babysitter. The owner of the child is the state of Connecticut. The state of Florida owns your child. You gave your child to the state. And then people come and they call the law school and say, I didn't know. How do I get my child back? Okay, listen up now. Get your pencil sharpened. You don't get your child back, never, ever, forever and ever. You cannot get your child back from the state after you give your child to the state. Okay, got that? You cannot get your child back once you give them away. They're gone. Gone. Forever. Now hang on. I've got to give you a reminder and we'll be right back with more on the doctrine of parens patriae when we return. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All of these Law Hour programs, by the way, are archived on the Internet by title and date. And I don't know how many are on there, but I've done more than 2,000 programs, and I know that there's 1,500, many hundreds of these programs are on the Internet website, and you can access them, and they're on 16 and 32-bit quality, and you can download them free of charge. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, simply call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archive on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Talking about the doctrine of parens patriae as it relates to medical care. All right, now let me tell you a couple of stories. One time my little girl, Elaine, was about 11 years old, and she came home. I forgot exactly how this came to my attention, came home from school or someplace, and she had a lump on her back about the size of my fist. I mean, it was a lump raised about 1/2 inch high. I had never seen anything like this in my life. It actually wasn't in the middle of her back. It was on her right shoulder, just below the shoulder blade. And I looked at it, and I touched it, and I said, is that sore? No, it wasn't particularly sore. Didn't really hurt her bad. Craziest thing I'd ever seen. An irregular lump on her back, below her shoulder blade, about 1/2 inch high. I mean, this thing stuck out. And so I asked her, I said, and her mother asked her, and we inquired, Did somebody hit you in the back at school? Did you fall down off of your bicycle or something? And something had to have caused that. No, I can't remember. Well, she had been up to the high school. Now, remember, she's 11 years old. She's in grammar school. You know, she'd been up to the high school and they had a high board up there. I think it was 25 feet off the pool. A high board. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, just jumping off of a diving board. I'm talking about a high board. I don't know how high it was, 10, 15, 20 feet, something like that. And she'd been jumping off this high board swimming. She's a pretty good swimmer. And we thought, well, she must have jumped off that high board and she's dislocated her shoulder. She's done something and the pain hasn't set in or something. So, you know, as a parent, what is my duty as a parent to a child who has a medical problem? All right, well, let's take a look here in the law. A parent has a legally enforceable duty to provide his child with necessary medical care. It is ordinarily for the parent in the first instance to decide, however, what is actually necessary for the protection and the preservation of the life and health of his child, so long as he acts as a reasonable and ordinary prudent parent who would act in a like situation. Well, now, as a parent, what would an ordinary parent in a usual circumstance like that do? Should I ignore it? Should I have somebody pray over it? Should I take her to the emergency room? What do you do? Okay, well, here's what I did. I said, well, it looks like a bone is out of place. And I moved her arm. She could raise her arm. She had full range of movement. I took her to a chiropractor. Chiropractor, a bone specialist, somebody who has an x-ray machine and who puts bones into place. And could tell me, is the bone broken? Is there a broken bone? What caused this lump? So I took her to a chiropractor. And the chiropractor took her in, looked at it, said, I've never seen anything like this in my life. I don't know what that is. He took an x-ray of it. Now, ordinarily, I'm opposed to x-rays because of the radiation that goes with it. But, you know, from time to time, there may be a case, and this seemed to be a pretty appropriate case to me to take an x-ray. I'm opposed to indiscriminate use of x-ray, but, you know, once in a while, maybe you need one. And this looked like, to me, one of those times. So we took an x-ray, no broken bones. Now, he said, now, you know, of course, that as a doctor, you know, we have certain duties and responsibilities, And I think that if that was my child, I would take her over to St. Al's Hospital and have them look at it from a medical doctor's point of view. Medical doctor. Okay. Now, ordinarily, I'm opposed to medical doctors. I stay as far away from medical doctors as I can get. I keep about the same distance between me and medical doctors as I do between me and rattlesnakes and copperheads and cobras. That's about what I think of a medical doctor. Licensed, bonded, and registered and insured by the state. An agent of the state. In absolute opposition to the laws of God. But there are times, you know, when you might want to go to one of these guys. And this seemed like a pretty opportune time. So I had an old buddy over there. And I said, hey, buddy, come on over here. And so my old buddy took my little girl over to the ER. And he took her into the ER and he said to the nurse there, he said, this could be a case of child abuse. This could be a case of child abuse. Now that triggers some legal machinery. You see, when a medical practitioner, nurses, doctors, chiropractors, you know, psychiatrists and psychologists, believe that or have reason to believe that child abuse could come into play, they must notify the proper authorities. And in Idaho, the proper authority is the prosecuting attorney. And so they took my child in. Nobody signed any admittance contract. They took my child into St. Al's Hospital, which is what the law requires. And I appeared the next morning. That was on a Friday night, Saturday morning. I went up to the hospital and I said, have you got my daughter, Elaine Gordon, in this institution? and this nurse was just dripping venom. I mean, if she'd have been a rattlesnake, that would have been poison dripping off of her fangs. She was about as nasty as you could get. And that's because, of course, if there's child abuse, it's the father that's doing it. Especially if it's a daughter. It's got to be the father who's the abuser of his daughter. And she handed me some papers, and she informed me that my daughter wasn't leaving this hospital until this was all filled out and blah, 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 blah. And I've covered that story a time or two in another context as it relates to credit. But I wanted to show you what the law requires here. Now, I don't want to pay for these services. And I'm a lawyer, and so I know how the law works, and I knew that they had to admit my child into St. Al's Hospital without an admittance contract under the law of the state. Because, why? Because there could be child abuse. Was there any child abuse? No. None. Did they determine that there was no child abuse? Yes, they determined that there was no child abuse. And then when they said to me, pay this bill, it's $8,000, I said, excuse me. Excuse me? Pardon me, lady. Excuse me. I didn't agree to put my child in the hospital. I didn't even bring her here. And furthermore, that next morning, Saturday morning, I said, you better give me my child. Let me take her home and let her die there. And the nurse was just shocked beyond credulity. She just couldn't believe what she was hearing. I told her the truth. I said, hey, look, I'm not going to pay you. I didn't bring her in here. I don't want her here. I'm not going to pay you. And she said, your child is not leaving this institution. I said, okay. Well, where could my child be safer? Now she's in the hospital being looked after by licensed, bonded, professional medical practitioners. Licensed, bonded, and insured by the state. And after all, who better to pay this child's hospital bills than the state of Idaho, the state that owns the child, for crying out loud? All I am is the babysitter. Now, the state would like to have you take your child to the hospital and then say, I'm the parent of the child, which is a damn lie. You are not the child's parent. You are the child's babysitter. But if you come into the hospital and say, I'm the parent and I'm responsible and I have insurance and I will pay this bill, the state loves you. The state loves you. The state wants to own your child. They just don't want to pay the child's hospital bills. They want you, the babysitter, to pay that. They want you to educate your child in the state's public institution so that they can mold this child to be the state's perfect citizen, paying taxes to the state. Well, okay. If you want to do that, you can. But you don't have to. If you want to pay the hospital bill, you certainly can. Don't let me get in the way of the happiness and success of all you parents out there that want to carry medical insurance and want to be responsible for these bills for somebody else's kid. I mean, if you want to pay the hospital bills of somebody else's kid, have at it. They'll love you for it. But you don't have to. There's no law that requires it. And I object to paying the hospital bills of somebody else's child that I'm just the babysitter of. Now, if you want me to pay the hospital bill, give me the kid. Let me own the child. Let me own this child as property, and I'll pay the bills. Otherwise, I'm adverse to that. By the way, the state did pay the bill. They didn't pay $8,000, but they paid $2,000. The state gets a discount. See, if I walk in there and be the big shot and I say, well, this is my kid and I've got hospital insurance, or I don't have insurance, but I got a home, they charge me $8,000. But when the state pays the bill, it's only $2,000. Isn't that just special? I thought you'd love it. Now, by the way, the school nurse is this child's guardian also. And remember, under guardian-ward relationship, there are superior guardians. Well, in the guardian-ward relationship over the custody and the care and control of a child, the parents are at the bottom of the totem pole. The superior guardian in order is the state, number one, the state's agent, the judge, number two, or the inferior guardians such as social lady, school marm, or probation officer. They're all ahead of you, mom and dad. And that's because they have greater expertise in child rearing. They've got letters after their name. Do you? Well, you may have a letter after your name, parent, but you gave up your right to the child when you gave it to the state by way of that birth certificate, remember? All right. So let's get the pecking order in order, and then once you know where the pecking order is, then you can perform your duty as the state would like to have you perform your duty. All right, now I'm going to shift here. We've got about 10, 15 minutes left. Let me take a look over here at the laws on marriage. Here's a fellow by the name of Dr. Everett Sullivan. He's a Baptist pastor who has gained renown as the Nebraska preacher who went to jail rather than license his school. Let's talk about education. We get this quite often. People will call up here and they're real concerned about the probation officer and the social lady and school marm who's threatening them and saying, if you don't send your kid to public school, we're going to take your kid away from you and educate him in public school by way of a foster home. And a lot of times people, they get really upset about that. They get excited. And they want to know, well, can the state do that? Well, the state can do just about anything that they want. It's called the police power, but there are limitations, legal limitations on the state's police power. And I call this the lines drawn in the sand. Lines drawn in the sand. And you need to know where these lines are drawn in the sand so that you don't cross over that line. Because if you cross over that police power line, the state's going to wallop you right between the eyes. So you get up real close to the line, but then you back off. Get up close to the line, you back off. Don't cross the line. Now, Dr. Everett Sullivan, this is back in 1983, he said this. He said, now many people have asked me, how did they get you in jail? And let me say this, and it may shock you, but I personally was never charged with anything. I've never been charged with breaking the law. I've never been charged with committing a crime. I've never had a trial. So you ask again, how in the world did they get you in jail? Well, I may know nothing about your church, and I may hit you here, but I am finding that this is one of the things that God wants me to tell churches. They sued the corporation. Now, I don't know if your church is incorporated or not, but if it is, then you better listen up. When a church incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state. And the agents and the officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. And by the way, if you take a license for anything, you lose your constitutional right for the thing that you took the license out for. Now, did you know that, boys and girls? Did you know that when you got a driver's license, you gave up your constitutional right to travel? Did you know that when you got a business license, you gave up your constitutional right to do private business? And when you got a marriage license, you gave up your right to own your children and to own your wife and to own your husband or to own your children, ladies? That's right. Now, a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. Now, can you tell me what's unlawful about marriage, business, or travel for which you people gave up your rights for a mere privilege in commerce? Now, all of you people out there listening to me right now have marriage licenses, business license. Social Security is your business license, you laborers. So you got a business license, a marriage license, and a driver's license. Those are your primary licenses. Everybody has those. And when you got those licenses, you gave up certain property rights. Did you know what property rights you were giving up? Did you have full informed consent? Did you know what you were doing? Well, the law presumes that you were, because after all, you were 18 years old, weren't you? And when you were 18, you knew everything. You knew everything that there was to know in the world, didn't you, when you were 18? And after you passed 18, you started to get dumber and dumber, and by the time you got to be 25 or 30, you recognized that you didn't know quite everything there was in the world, and by the time you got to be 40 or 50, you figured out that you didn't know very damn much, and when you got to be 65 or 70, you said to yourself, God, I can't believe I'm this dumb. I'm at that age, 65 to 70. I look around and I say, oh my God, I can't believe I was that dumb. I got a marriage license. I was 23 years old when I got my marriage license. I got a business license. Hell, I got two or three of them. I wasn't satisfied with one. I couldn't learn the first time. I was suffering from the terminal stupids. Every time I went out and did a business deal, I went out and got a new business license. Had a driver's license until I was about, I don't know, 45. 40 maybe, I don't know when I got rid of it. 1970, no, about 1982. I rescinded my driver's license in 1982. I guess I was 43 years old. Haven't had a driver's license, marriage license, or business license since. But I did then. All right, well, when you got this license, Dr. Silliton says, you gave up your constitutional right for the thing you took the license out for. Now, your founding fathers fought and bled and died to give you these freedoms, privileges, and immunities that you enjoy under your constitution. Boys and girls, now I know that you don't know what your constitution is, you don't know what it says, and you couldn't find your constitution with both hands at high noon with a road map. Well, if you've been educated in public school, you can't. But I just thought I'd share with you that you did have some things called constitutional rights. Those rights came from your God, your Creator. They did not come from the state. George Washington, John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson, and John Hancock, these ancient old-timey guys, you know, from the olden days, they didn't give you any rights, but they did create a doctrine and a document to protect those rights that you got from God. Sullivan goes on, he says, now I'm going to give you a shocker. I'm going to shock you now. I don't like to do these things because it makes me look so ridiculous. But you see, we've learned some things. For 6 years, we went down to the legislature and we said to the legislature, give us some relief. Now I'm glad tonight that I can stand here before you and say, they didn't give us that relief. And I'm glad they didn't because the Constitution says that it's an area that we shouldn't be involved in the first place. But as we testified before the committee, the parents would testify and they'd weep and they'd say, these are our little children. God gave us these children, and we're responsible for them, as they'd look across the table at those senators. Can't you just picture this? You know, some mother is sitting there. This is my little child. Tears streaming down her cheeks as she testifies. Senator Pfeiffer, he was a young man at that time. This is 1983. He was a young man, about 38 years old. He was an attorney and a legislator on the subcommittee, on the education committee, as a matter of fact. As the parents were testifying, Pfeiffer looked back across the table and he said to this one young mother who had just completed her testimony, he said, do you have a state marriage license? And she said, yes, I do. And he said, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege from the state? And that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? Did you know that, boys and girls, that your children were wards of the state? Hey, wake up out there and smell the coffee, boys and girls. Senator Peter Hoagland was on a television show with me debating the issue, and what he said to me on that show was repeated by the head of the state PTA and by the executive director of the State School Board Association and by the executive director of the teachers' union. Four people said the same thing. We were on Channel 6. No. Channel 5, live at 5. No, it was Channel 6. I'll take that back. Channel 6. Live at 5 was the story. And the lady, the moderator, looked over at me and she said, Pastor Sullivan, only 8 states in the union require licensed schools and certified teachers. It surely must not be that important of an issue. And I said, you're right. This is Sullivan. He says, you're right, lady. And there's a way to solve this problem. It's national standardized testing. Now, we had our students tested by the state's own experts. And we're a year ahead of the public schools. We're 2.5 years ahead of the Omaha public schools. We were so good that the judge wouldn't even let us put it in the record. So she looks over at Senator Peter Hoagland. Now, this is in the state of Nebraska. Got that? Up in Nebraska. She looks over at Senator Hoagland. She says, Senator, then why is Nebraska making such a big deal out of this? Yeah, Senator, why is the state of Nebraska making such a big deal out of this little Baptist parochial school educating children without state-certified and licensed teachers? Huh? Especially since all the parents of these children want to send their children to this Baptist school. You ever wonder about that, boys and girls? Why does the state make such a big deal out of this thing of education, public education, and control over the teachers in parochial schools? Why does the state want this control over your child's education? Well, listen up, folks. Here's what the senator said to the whole listening audience. Are you listening? Here's what the senator said, quote, the reason that we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate children in their doctrine. You got that, Christian? Because you don't have a right to educate children. Not your children. The state's children. Christian? Pilgrim? Got that? Why? Well, because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of a one-world socialist order. And their children will not fit in. Hey, you know, your Christian children aren't going to fit into the New World Order and humanist religion and humanist philosophy. Now, isn't that just real special? Yes, Senator Hoagland hit the nail on the head when he said the reason we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate children in their doctrine. Because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of a one-world socialist order, and their children will not fit in. God, as old William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. All right, boys and girls, we brought this on ourselves, and Everett Sullivan went through this, and he learned some lessons, and you and I can learn from Everett Sullivan. So next time we'll take a look at student section, common law marriage in Tennessee, and I'll show you about this thing of guardian ward relationships and how church lady comes in and social lady and probation man and all these guys and how to deal with the state's children when you have custody of the state's children. And that'll be next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, back on the farm, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, and all you have to do to order yours, which is the place to start, is simply call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.